CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Coquitlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh. We also stream online at cjsf.ca and listen to podcasts of our programs and our website.
Tune in to Intravenous on Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. for music and talk radio about all things, all genders. Discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through an intersectional feminist lens, our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. Intravenous, every Wednesday morning from 10 to 11, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
Welcome to Intravenous. We are back, everyone. After quite a bit of a hiatus, Intravenous is now back every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., guys. This is a show where we share the stories, ideas, and experiences of women and femmes. Each week, we'll explore what it means to live, work, and create in the Lower Mainland and Tri-Cities area, and we'll take a closer look at topics such as gender-based violence, inequality, and feminism in a way that is open, real, and honest. The show is going to be a mix of stories, roundtable discussions, interviews, and music that celebrate creativity, resilience, activism, and community. My name is Nicole Hines. I am the Public Affairs and Talk Coordinator here at CJSF 90.1 FM. And each week, I'm going to be joined with sometimes a group of folks. Sometimes I'll have a guest that I'll just be talking one-on-one with. And I'm hoping to bring a mix of women's and non-binary perspectives. And together we'll dig into like our own stories and experiences and talk about things that are on our mind, things that are happening in the world and in our local communities. We have relaunched Intravenous to align with the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. This is an annual international campaign that takes place from November 25th to December 10th. The campaign started yesterday with the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and that was recognized by the United Nations General Assembly, and it ends on December 10th with International Human Rights Day. December 10th was chosen to honor the day the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948. It was the first global statement of human rights and one of the UN's earliest major achievements. Now, during the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, there are some key dates that I'd like to share before we get into our discussion today. First was November 25th, and that was the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. And then December 1st is World AIDS Day. December 5th is the International Volunteer Day for Economic and Social Development. December 6th is the anniversary of the Montreal Massacre, observed as the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women in Canada. December 10th is the International Human Rights Day. And that is pretty much the key date that is going to happen during this time frame that I just wanted to share with everyone. And now I just want to talk about, give you sort of a heads up on what the conversation will be about, basically the topic today. Normally I am going to be, I'll have some guests with me, and we'll have more of a roundtable discussion. But today, I'm riding solo. I'm doing the things. And I am going to be talking about digital violence. Before I get into that, I'm going to start off with a tune so that I can just get myself all sorted and all the things. And I'm going to start off with a tune by Deborah Jean Creelman. And Deborah happens to be a Vancouver-based singer-songwriter. And the song that we are going to listen to, and I'm hoping that everything works here because I was having a little bit of trouble, is called Colorblind. So we are going to get you to enjoy.
Now our goals are
Welcome back, everyone, to Intravenous. Again, this is our first day back after a long hiatus. My name is Nicole Hines, and I am your host today. I'm actually going to be talking about the topic of digital violence, and I will be going through some examples of what digital violence can look like. I'll be sharing some personal experiences with digital violence. But before I get to that, I am going to be sharing an audio that gives you a bit of a description of what digital violence is. And when I was looking for material for this episode, I stumbled on this video. It's pretty much like an audio-based video. And it was specifically geared towards the International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women and the fact that the 2025 theme is End Digital Violence. So I'm just going to share that, and then I'll be back for a bit of commentary.
Observed annually on November 25, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women is a global call to prevent and address gender-biased violence in all its forms. Theme for 2025 is Unite to End Digital Violence Against All Women and Girls. What does this theme emphasize? The campaign highlights that digital violence is real violence. Online abuse such as harassment, doxing, deepfakes, cyberstalking, image-based abuse, hate speech, AI-driven attacks disproportionately affects women and girls and can have serious offline consequences. It draws attention to how AI, anonymity, weak regulation, and impunity make digital abuse more dangerous and widespread. Why this theme, or the rationale behind the theme? Transformation of violence. As technology becomes more embedded in daily life, forms of violence are shifting from physical or public spaces to digital and private spaces. Legal gaps. Many countries lack adequate laws that address digital forms of gender-biased violence. Accountability issues. Platforms often do not take sufficient responsibility for harmful content or harassment. There is limited moderation, weak redress mechanisms, and low transparency. AI risk. Artificial intelligence is being misused, for example, to create non-consensual deepfake pornography to target women with harassment more efficiently and to amplify disinformation. Offline spillover. Digital violence often leads to real-world consequences, stalking, physical violence, femicide. Under-resourced feminist movements. Women's rights organizations, especially those working online or in digital safety, often lack the funding, legal support, and infrastructure to protect survivors or advocate effectively. 30 years since Beijing Declaration. 2025 marks the 30th anniversary of Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, a major global commitment to gender equality. The theme aligns with renewing that commitment in the digital era. Significance of the theme. Visibility. Brings global attention to digital violence, which is often under-recognized compared to physical violence. Holistic protection. Pushes the protection of women's rights not just offline, but in the increasingly important online world. Policy reform encourages governments to modernize laws and close the regulatory gap around online gender-based violence. Corporate responsibility urges tech companies to build safer platforms, improve content moderation, and proactively combat abuse rather than reactively. Empowerment and safety strengthens the capacity of women and girls to safely navigate digital spaces, seek recourse, and be empowered rather than silenced. Global movement unites different stakeholders, international organizations, NGOs, tech sector, civil society, individuals in a concerted effort. Prevention plus recovery focuses not just on punishing perpetrators but also on preventing abuse through education, literacy, and supporting survivors. Sustainable development links to SDG 5, gender equality, and shows how digital safety is integral to broader gender equality goals. Intersectional approach recognizes that digital violence affects women differently based on race, orientation, public role, disability, etc. Legacy and momentum uses the 30-year anniversary of Beijing to galvanize renewed action in a concrete and modernized way. 10 calls to action. Strengthen legal frameworks. Create and enforce clear laws that criminalize all forms of digital violence against women and girls. Promote platform accountability. Require tech companies to design safer platforms with strong moderation, fast removal of harmful content, and transparent policies. Invest in survivor support. Fund and expand legal, psychological, and digital recovery services for survivors of online abuse. Build digital literacy and education. Educate communities, especially women and girls, on online safety, consent, rights, and responsible digital behavior. Promote prevention campaigns. Run large-scale awareness campaigns to challenge misogyny and emphasize that digital violence is real and unacceptable. Ensure intersectional response. Design protection measures that address the unique risks faced by marginalized women and girls. Enhance accountability mechanism. Strengthen law enforcement and international cooperation to effectively investigate and prosecute digital crimes. Support civic and feminist movements. Provide sustained funding and resources to women-led and feminist organizations working to combat digital violence. Promote research and data collection. Collect reliable data on digital abuse to guide strong policies, platform reforms, and targeted interventions. Encourage collective action and solidarity. Mobilize individuals, communities, and men and boys to actively call out, report, and stand against digital violence.
Hello, hello, hello. I hope you got a lot from listening to that audio. I got a lot from it. Like, one of the main things that really stood out to me was that digital violence is real violence. I think that it's one of the things that gets often, it kind of stays in the shadows and doesn't get a lot of, it doesn't get featured a lot, I think, because people don't think that there's like true effects of it. So one of the first things I do want to talk about is like, what is digital violence? So, I mean, the audio that I was able to share with you gave us a really good synopsis of it. And I'm going to break it down just a little bit further. So by digital violence, I'm referring to the use of technology like social media, messaging and online platforms to threaten, harass, shame, intimidate, impersonate, or expose people. This can often look like doxing. And doxing is something that I've seen a lot on social media platforms like TikTok more than some of the other platforms that I use. And that is basically where a person who, you know, they have a platform, their place of either residence or the place that they work at is exposed to the public. So that is, you know, a form of doxing. It can, digital violence can also look like non-consensual image sharing. So that does happen a lot where you've shared an image with somebody and then they've in turn shared it with others without your knowledge, or they have shared it to, then in turn threaten you in some way or try to like stalk you in some way and even impersonate you. One of the things about social media is, you know, I come from an era of like when Facebook was like one of the first major platforms, even before that, MySpace and stuff like that, Tumblr, for example. But Facebook, I feel, for me, was like one of the first big platforms that attracted a lot of people collectively. And that is a platform that also allowed for people to impersonate profiles. And I think it has to do with the fact that there is like, you can really be anonymous in many different ways when you are creating profiles. I mean, you just need an email in many cases. So that becomes an easier thing to do. And I do believe just in the way that I've seen the rise of like bullying in comments, and even the term keyboard warriors, if you've ever heard of that term before. But what it is like people, because they're hiding behind a screen and they're not actually exposed to the world, they end up being a bit more nastier and saying things that I don't think that they would actually say to somebody in person. I don't think they would have sort of like the guts to do that. But behind a keyboard, it's so much easier to do that. And I've seen it in other aspects as well. Like, I've worked customer service a lot of my younger years. And I found that when I was working customer service roles that was customer facing, so let's say I was like in the bank or I was working retail, people would, they'd be rude, but they wouldn't be as rude as if they were calling you on the phone or if they were contacting you in like a chat forum type thing, right? I found that in the ways to communicate that didn't allow for them to be exposed, sort of like, or where we're looking at each other face to face, it was much, much easier to kind of be mean. So that, I feel, has like really kind of like moved over to the social media movement, because you can create a profile and never really have to expose your full first and last name. You don't even have to expose your photo. And, you know, lots of other platforms, like let's say Reddit, for example, like it's just an avatar, right? So it just makes it even easier to do the things that you shouldn't be doing, right? So again, with that piece that we just heard from, like the fact that digital violence is real violence is, you know, was like a huge thing that stood out to me. So I want to break down some of the types of digital violence that people can experience. The first one that I did kind of like talk about a little bit was the doxing. And that is, as I mentioned, where people will they'll share another person's private information. And it can be where they live. It can be their workplace. It can be their phone number. And this is done all online now to the public without the victim's approval without their permission, right? This is dangerous because it invites like further harassment to that said person, stalking, unwanted contact, or even physical danger, right? Like there are a lot of people who have been doxxed and have received death threats. So it is quite frightening for the person who has been doxxed. I have seen, like I mentioned, on TikTok, it was when I tend to see it more often than other platforms, but I have seen where creators have had their address leaked on social media, and then, you know, they have families, and, you know, they have to, like, consider, like, moving, depending on how intense it gets. The next type of digital violence is the non-consensual image sharing. This also can be like intimate image abuse. And this is when images that are intimate to you or videos are shared without your consent. It's basically, you know, a betrayal, right? Like you've trusted somebody, you've shared something intimately with them, and then they are either threatening to publicly expose you or they actually do it to try to destroy your reputation, to try to embarrass you, all the things, right? So your privacy, your dignity, and your mental health all come under attack at once. And I feel like that is so difficult to deal with while you're trying to still function in life, right? Like you know, it's if something like this happens, one of the first things like I would want to do is like run away and hide, so to speak, but I wouldn't have the ability to do that, right? Like I would still have bills to pay. I'd still have to pay to live where I live. I'd still have to, you know, provide for myself to eat and all of the things, which means I can't just remove myself from the situation. I still have to be in the situation fighting this. And I find that one of the things in that audio that we heard earlier at the beginning of the hour is the fact that it's hard to try to get support in stopping the person who's doing the thing to you, right? Because so many of these profiles are not somebody's real name, right? It's hard to trace back to who's the actual person doing the thing. And I don't know about you, but I have had a situation where I was harassed online with a profile that I didn't know. And in fact, the person would just create a bunch of different profiles like constantly and basically just send me DMs, things like that. I was lucky that I didn't have any threats of trying to expose anything, but it was more being like having your days disrupted on a regular basis and not knowing who's doing this. So the reason why I bring up this experience is that when I tried to seek some support, I think this was happening on Instagram actually, and I was trying to seek some support as to like to stop the profiles and to stop the creation of the profiles, but it was really difficult because there isn't a live person that you can connect with on those platforms, right? Like you submit a support ticket, you know, and you basically can report the profile that might be sending you something. You can send a report to that, but there's no real follow through. You can't actually talk to somebody or even like chat with somebody to be like, okay, this is the issue that I'm having. You kind of just support and you indicate what the support is. It's kind of like a form. It's a series of questions that you complete and then you submit it and then that is it, right? Like there's no real follow-up on that. And that is something that I feel that needs to change. One of the things that I loved about that audio was there was the section near the end that had a list of 10 calls to action. And one of the things that I loved was number 4, I believe, was build digital literacy. And I think that that is super important because you have, you know, a generation like myself who, you know, didn't come from the digital world, but the digital world was introduced in my late teenage and early and really heavy in the early adulthood, but then you have like a generation of people who were very heavily surrounded by social media, like even down to into high school. I can't even imagine what that would be like to have social media as part of my high school experience, right? So